You are now listening to The Invited Podcast with Cedric Harris and Tia McClain. You've officially been invited. Welcome to The Invited Podcast. Today we introduce to you Joseph Copeland. And Joe has dedicated 20 years of his life to enriching students' lives. He's held various roles in the education system as a teacher, a coach, dean of students, principal, assistant superintendent, and currently is the area director of student services for Keller ISD. Mr. Copeland holds a bachelor's degree in communications from Baylor University and a master's in educational administration from the University of Texas at Arlington. Before his career in education began, he had an interesting stint as a professional basketball player. So I'm super excited to talk to you about your journey thus far, challenges and flaws in the educational system, specifically on closing the digital divide. And you told us about something about eliminating 13 years of uninterrupted mediocrity. So I want to learn more about that. But I would love for us to all just learn more about what we can do moving forward to ensure that future generations are set up for success. So thank you, Joe, for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I'll start out by just giving you a little tidbit. You were very gracious in introducing me. Thank you for that. And what I've learned over the years is that I've always been a team player. And I just couldn't help myself from my ninth grade years or even prior to that. So understanding how the teamwork, as you always hear the cliche, makes the dream work. Well, most people like to use the cliche, but they don't know what is required to really get that done. So being a person that played basketball and various sports, but actually focused on basketball, it gave me a lot of opportunities to go overseas to various countries, South America and Europe, and really learn what it was like to get to know people, get to know cultures, get to know the environments, and really establish myself as a person who did not have much empathy, being a spoiled, you know, athlete, being someone on a pedestal that everybody looks up to, wants your autograph, so to speak, being in college where everybody's cheering you and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Now I know that feels good. It's great because you get a pat on the back. But when the pat on the back stopped, then what? Mm-hmm. So I'm at the point now to where I don't need a pat on the back to do what I call God's work. Now I understand that. And I've known it for about 20, 30 years. So as a coach that wasn't paid and I was just in between summers, I would help my buddies who were in education and I would train their athletes because I knew how to do that. I speak several languages. So for me to take all of that experience as a ball player and be able to say, you know what, I'm going to try and enrich some other young people to give them a chance to see that if you do these things, you can conquer your life. You can serve, you can honor your God, and you can probably make a little money doing it. Yeah. And then keep everybody happy. So that's a win-win. So I've taken it to another level by becoming a certified teacher, coach, ESL teacher, Spanish teacher, and sharing those stories has been my claim to fame, so to speak, because life is all about his or her story. Mm-hmm. And if you can tell your story and people are listening to your story, then maybe they'll tell theirs. And if they tell theirs, you get to know people. If you establish relationships, you establish trust. If you establish trust, you can learn from anyone, anywhere. And that's why as an educator, that's what I do. That's what I work on. I don't work on the ABCs and the 1-2-3s or like in basketball, the X's and O's. Mm-hmm. I could care less about that because if you don't trust me, you're not going to run the route. If you don't trust me, you're not going to look for the pass. If you don't trust me, you're not going to listen to what I have to say. And I think that's where we go wrong a lot of times in education. And then I'll get to your other question, but that's my focus now. Knowing what I know with the experience I've gotten, I'm all about what I just told you, period. And I don't talk about it much unless you ask me, but I do it incrementally because I don't want to be in front. I don't want to play point guard anymore. I like to be the general manager, but if I have to play point guard, then I will. Right. But I'm going to hand the ball off to Sid and let him do it. I'm going to hand it off to you, and I'm going to run back in the back and give you everything you need to get it done and coach you along the way. So coaching for me is a lot more important than it has been ever before because I can get more done and reach more people by doing that and empowering people to do their own thing, which I really understand now is just as important.
I like it.
Exactly. And like you talked about, we touched on as well, you've held many different roles, worn many different hats. So could you tell us about your current role and what kind of responsibilities you're currently responsible for?
Well, I'm transitioning to Keller. That's a back channel story that most people don't understand, that the process of transitioning from job to job. Most people don't know how to do that. Most people don't trust. So we won't get into that as much. That's a different podcast. But to be able to know that I'm going to be serving in Duncanville, we had 12,000 students enrolled, almost 13,000. And my role there was to provide all the student services support, health services support, et cetera, there, mm-hmm. put out fires, put systems in place to just help run the school district in addition to everyone else. So those departments are all connected in schools to help keep the district running that people don't see. Well, in Keller, I'll be doing the same thing. It's just a bigger school district. Okay. It's a much bigger school district. There's 35 plus thousand students there, wow. 40 plus campuses. So just kind of go through the numbers of the administrators that run the buildings and help take care of children, the teachers that do the same thing, and all the support staff in the district. I will be a part of a team now that is helping ensure that we're doing everything we can to run the systems that you just pick a system that we're going to support students with. So when you say student services, people don't really understand what that means. I do. And a lot of people don't. Because it's not about the adult getting everything they need. It's about us giving that child or children or their families what they need. Mm-hmm. So this young person can get a chance to get what we've got, what I've got. And we'll do whatever it takes to do that. But we're going to do it within the confines of the law if we have to do that. But we're going to do what's in the best interest of kids. And now I'll be doing that and reaching even more students than I was in Duncanville. So it's 13,000 versus 35,000.
Right.
Quite a jump.
Well, I've been there before. So I've worked there before in the same capacity. Just it wasn't as developed. We just started the program of the student services department there. They had never had one in the school district that large. So the leadership said, you know, we need to be able to provide this service. And we did. So we launched a department that was providing the service. And being gone 3 years, they've evolved. Now I'm going back because that's what I do. And that's what some of us just do it. And we know how to take care of people and develop the relationships and the trust. That way you can really get things done without all the red tape, without all the getting in the way. Because a lot of times you guys know about the chain of command stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the chain of command says, well, I got to let my boss know and let the other boss know. Mm-hmm. And then when the other boss says it's okay, then the other boss will tell the other boss it's time to go ahead. And the other boss says it's okay. Then the other boss says, now you can go do it. Wow.
Too much.
So the kids are sitting there looking at you like, huh?
Right.
I don't think that's fair. And I think we can do better. And I think with the age of technology, as we get to the latter part of our podcast, I think we're going there. And if I can do anything from this point, even after I'm done or retire, I will be able to make sure that we implement you all's mindset. Your mindset, and you don't have to be honest because it's your podcast, I believe your mindset is we're going to get it done in the least amount of time possible so I can go out and enjoy myself.
Facts. I would have to agree with that mindset. I'm with you.
I mean, I'm there. I'm 60. I'm with you right now. I'm trying to do everything I can to make it more efficient for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Joe, I have a question for you. So from my understanding, you are from California originally. Right. So what brought you from California? And then if you can also lead that into like choosing your major at Baylor and what your career like choice was at that time.
Being in Los Angeles, born and raised there, my mom had my brothers and I, three brothers and a sister whom I'm visiting now. Then we were there. We moved into a home in the kind of like the south part of South Central, which is closer to the beach cities, maybe 8 or 9 minutes from the airport, about 10 minutes from the beach. Went to private school in LA, and then my mom met my stepdad, but he's like my dad. Yeah. Because my dad wasn't there. You know, when Pastor came in, Pastor Howard came in, we call him Pop. Mm-hmm. When he came in, we had a chance to start to travel because he worked for American Airlines. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
My mom was already traveling, but he had three boys. My mom had four, three boys and one girl. So we had seven total. And then there one more came, which made eight. And then there was another one that happened before we got this. We had nine people in the family. Well, not all of us lived in the same house at the same time. But
yeah.
I started going back to Texas to visit my dad's grandpa, who ended up being like one of my all-time favorite mentors. And I would go there starting at the age of 14, 15. Mm-hmm. I'm playing basketball at the private high school in L.A. And during the summer, I would play summer ball with the most heralded high school, probably at the time, Dunbar High School, playing basketball. So every summer we'd play in the gym with no skirt, no shirts and, you know, shin skins and shirts.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was on. I loved it. And that helped me become a better ball player. But I would spend time with my grandpa. Mm-hmm. And that relationship got me to understand Texas. And then I'd go and spend time with my great granny in Shreveport. So at a young age, the heat and humidity and the hot didn't bother me. All the Southern Southwestern drama. What are y'all talking about? Y'all need to toughen up. Well, you know, the California cool thing was great.
Yeah.
But when I came back to play ball with the California cool, it was light years ahead of them jokers. They weren't that hungry. Really? I mean, it's California, 75 degrees every day, go to the beach, kick back, take it easy. And I'm like, nah, I'm going to dunk on you today. I'm going to dunk on you right now. Sorry, I got 30, game's over. Let's go party somewhere. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it was a different mindset. And from there, my grandpa walked me through when I went and played ball overseas. He was like, what you going to do? What are you going to do? You got money. What you going to do with it? You better buy something.
Mm-hmm.
You need to own something. So I did. Bought a house, bought land in his area, bought more land, just buying stuff, not knowing that 20 years later, man, that's going to put me in a pretty good position. So that relationship inspired me to say yes to Baylor. And at the time, Brian Gumbel was the man. Brian Gumbel is a guy who does HBO Sports. Mm-hmm. He was Mr. Morning talk show host with Katie Couric and Jane Pauley in NBC. Brian Gumbel was the only brother out there at the time.
Wow.
Brian Gumbel, look him up. And I wanted to be Brian Gumbel. So I got a gift of gab, as you can tell. I'm articulate. I speak several languages. I'm like, that's it. So I majored in communications, radio, TV at Baylor. And I knew, and even now, I'm going to have my own radio show. Just yes. Now it's just not the time for it. Mm-hmm. Or a podcast like what you guys are doing. But I want to put it on my website and do kind of like what you guys are doing. So for me to say yes to you, man, this is just practice for the next move. So look, you can have me on every 2 or 3 months or every 6 months. I'm there just because I enjoy putting it out there. And today It matters even more. And I realized that way back then, the radio and TV and communicating like this mm-hmm. is the wave of the future. For example, see this?
Yeah.
Back in the day, we used to watch Dick Tracy. And Dick Tracy cartoon, he was a detective that would be talking on his phone all the time.
And so now it's actually
50 years ago.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing it now. So that's what, to answer your question, that's the quick version of it. And now I didn't know that I'd have to get my master's to be an administrator. I didn't know I'd be an administrator until someone told me being a coach for you is not enough. You need to reach more kids. You can help me run the building. And I'm like, dude, I ain't the principal. That's too much work. He said, not for you. But he told me not for me.
Yeah.
So he gave me a radio and said, I need you here, 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 and here. But I got class. I already got you cut down. You got three classes now. I went from 4 to 3 and from 3 to 2. Mm. But I had 45 kids or 35, 40 kids a section teaching mm-hmm. Spanish or ESL. Okay. And I had the rest of the day to do administrative stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. I got it. And then the rest is history. And now you see me, you know, working in central offices now because I just got it. I mean, God willing, I'll do more and for longer periods of time. But I just have been given that gift to be able to handle it and take care of people. So, and I learned all that going up from what I just told you. All those influences are right there.
And so you touched a little bit on your basketball career. And this is something, for those that don't know, Joe is my older cousin. So we didn't touch on that. And this is something I've always been kind of curious about. So what was your hoop game like? What kind of player were you? And how did your overseas experience kind of shape the rest of your trajectory?
The basketball for me, playing in high school, one of the more prominent all-boys Catholic high schools back in the 70s, us, Bourbon Day, and a few others. Bourbon Day was very nationally known. We battled them. They were in the same league with us, but they always had 8 or 9 D1 players every year. We only had 2 or 3 or 4 sometimes. Mm-hmm. So the year I played, we had 4, including myself, but I was going to go low level because I graduated high school a month after I turned 17.
Oh, young.
So if my birthday was in June, I'd have graduated before I turned 17. So I was a young senior,
yeah,
and I wasn't mature enough physically. I had some, mm-hmm, you know, game and some other stuff, but I played, you know, the 2, the 3, the 4, because I jumped high. I was a pretty good athlete. I wasn't a center. And if I had to run the 1, I could run the 1 a little bit. But my ball handling skills wasn't like it should have been. But because I know how to protect the ball, I could get away with it. But then as I got older, I had to refine myself to a 2-3, a 2-3-4. Went to junior college, and I had my godfather. I call him my godfather because he's like another father to me. The late Paul Andro, who is a state championship coach in California with junior college basketball, he's second behind the famous Jerry Tarkanian with state championships. Well, I played with him and became an all-state basketball player, honorable mention as a freshman at 17. At 18, I was all-state. And then I took a lot of visits and all that other stuff. So I could play the D. And I was always the defensive stopper, always the leading scorer until I get to university where, you know, everybody's the leading scorer. So I played with guys who, had a bunch of talents, but there's always one leading scorer or two. I wasn't that guy, but without guys like me shutting down the other person or getting you 15 to 17 or 18 a game, you don't win games. You got to have some of those support folks. And as a teammate, I didn't care. I just wanted to win. And, when I was in junior college and high school, we won 27, 28, 30, 32, 35 games a year.
Wow.
So I knew what it took. I don't have to be the leading scorer to win 35 games a year. So I was a player. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, people say, what's your 1, 2, 3? I was 1. I could shoot it. I'm going to answer your question by saying I was a player.
Hey, that's
so
all.
So if I'm on your team, look, if I'm on your team, you gonna win.
Listen.
Hey, you call a game.
That's it.
And so, Joe, I'm actually really interested in that shift. So after your life as a basketball player, how did you like transition into life as an educator? Like, when did you make that move?
When my grandfather asked me, "What am I gonna do?" So when I stopped playing ball and I just settled in with him, I knew people at a company called Pitney Bowes. Okay. So Pitney Bowes is a mail service company, and they were one of the probably the more prominent mail service providers in the country. And through my alumni connection, I would exchange postage meters as a side hustle because I just didn't want to keep going to the bank because you could do that real quick. And it could be gone overnight if you just go bananas. And my grandfather said, "You need to do something." So I was a contractor. I'd make, a couple thousand a week, installing meters. And I'd work half a day. I like that. I'm done at 1 o'clock. Well, he would always tell me, and I'm hustling with him, doing concrete, doing bricks, chopping wood. And, we take care of some people in the neighborhood, just being the good dude, right? Owning some properties. And I didn't have to worry about much. But when he asked me, "What are you going to do that's significant?" And I said, "I am. I'm doing it now." Well, he said, "No, you're not. You're just playing golf and having a good time and making money. And, you got girlfriends. Whoop-de-doo. Wow. Yeah. You own real estate. Okay. Now what?" Mm-hmm. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You were put here to take care of something or somebody somehow." Ooh. "What is that?"
Yeah.
He already knew. He was just trying to get me to say something.
Yeah.
So one of my buddies, a couple of days later, who's a coach, he asked me to start training his players during the summer that didn't know what being a player meant.
Yeah.
They didn't know what work you had to put in and how much time and exactly what to do. So most of those guys that I was training that were in high school, we made most of them Division I basketball players, mm-hmm, in a season. So he would tell me, "You probably need to get in the classroom too." So knowing that, we had a bunch of people who didn't understand what that meant to give back, not get paid for it, to teach young men, especially because it's basketball guys, what to do, how to do it. So for me, it was pretty interesting to see how I was making an impact, and I didn't know I was making an impact. And then finally he told me, he said, so what else you gonna do? And he said, I think you'd be good at this. Mm-hmm. And I applied for a job one time, and the principal called me the next day and said, I need a Spanish teacher. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, submit all this stuff and they'll get you right in. Well, they sure did. They sure did. So once that happened, we had a chance to say, get in the classroom, help some people. I'd had all kind of questions by students about where I was from, what I was doing, what I used to do, because I used to show videos when I was overseas. Well, a lot of those youngsters didn't have a big brother or a mentor either.
Yeah.
So I became that person. And then, of course, the principal said, hey, here, take this radio and I need you to do some other stuff. So from there, I wasn't really asking for it. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of handed to me or put in my pocket. And they kept telling me, you'd be good at it. Just keep going.
Yeah.
Well, we moved back to L.A. after a few years. I got married, had a baby a few years later, moved back to L.A. because my coach wanted me to help him. So I was coaching junior college, teaching middle school, and my principal asked me to be an administrator officially. So I went from there, started working on my master's, and I got another call as my wife was getting a call from her company to go from L.A. back to Dallas. She got her dream job. And my principal from where I used to work in Richardson, he asked me if I wanted to be an administrator. We put you in a program, pay for your master's, I give you a full-time job. And he said, you'll be a superintendent in 10 years. And I said, okay, we'll be back. And as soon as I went up there and signed, it was a wrap and the rest is history. And I've gone up the ranks and, you know, almost got to, you know, the superintendent, but now I don't have to do that because I see now I can do just as much, if not more, without having to, you know, chase being a superintendent, because there's lots of ways to help families and communities and of course, kids.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's really, like, really, really helpful for young people who think they have to live one type of life or they have to choose one career and then that's it, that's all. But hearing a story like that, like you were playing professional basketball, you made a shift, you did something different, and now you're able to just, you're able to impact people's lives in many different ways. So that's a really, really helpful story.
And so how do you think the educational experience can change for a student based upon their socioeconomic status or their race or the resource they have? What is the big difference and how can those things be different for a student based upon those scenarios?
I'll give you one big one. And then I'll tee it up by saying when I went to high school, I went to an all boys college prep. Mm-hmm. And that all boys college prep had us in school from 8 to 1:30 every day. We had Monday, Wednesday, Friday classes and Tuesday, Thursday classes that were no longer than 35 minutes.
Oh, wow.
We were out of school at 1:30 every day. College prep, entrance exam. You had to take the SAT after your freshman year. If you didn't drop a certain number, like 1,100 or 1,000 or whatever it was, you were out. Oh. Right. There was no prep, right?
Yeah.
And being an athlete wasn't a big deal. I mean, there was no ineligibility because you didn't get a 70 or something. There was none of that. Mm-hmm. So what most people don't understand is that that model has gone away. They're trying to duplicate it, but they're scared to let them go that early. Mm-hmm. Well, what I believe in now, fast forward, you know, 50 years, what I believe in now, what I've seen now, what I was telling you about the Dick Tracy got your iPhone on and you can iWatch or Apple Watch on and you can talk into it now with all the stuff. We can do video like we are now. Mm-hmm. Well, it is a shame, a crying shame that schools have not progressed like the technology is that you guys and we have access to now.
Right.
Because the young learner today has not been allowed to become more efficient, but everything else around them is.
Yeah.
So you asked me that question about what can we do today? I would say to give everybody access, mm-hmm. give every family access, treat the internet like it's an electricity utility. Everybody should have it. Everybody should have 5G. Everybody should have access anywhere at any time. Everybody should have access to their classwork and their homework, just like they do if they decide to go to college mm-hmm. at a young age. Everybody in high school shouldn't be going to school for 7 hours a day. Babies shouldn't be going to school for 7 hours a day. No, we can do it differently because this video proves it. This podcast proves that we need to upgrade the system systematically. And if we wanted to drop the resources in there, it's a drop in the bucket if you're willing to do that. But remember, who goes to public school? So why isn't the will the same? Mm-hmm. Well, there's a number of reasons why the will isn't the same. So we have to give ourselves a chance to think about what does it look like when you give everybody access. And once you give them access, now you got to teach the people giving them access how to give them the right content with the access. So you have a teacher that's still teaching the same old lesson from 30 years or 20 years or 5 years and quote unquote hasn't modified that lesson to include students who don't need 5 hours to get it done.
Right.
It'll take them 30 minutes to get it done if you get out of the way. So that's a part of the issue too. Autonomy and control doesn't work today like people think it does. Putting you in the caste system doesn't work. Control is about casting you. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in casting. The system's trying to get there. It'll take them 40 years at the rate they go. I hope not, but I'm going to do everything I can to try and change that because the digital divide exists.
Yeah.
It exists even if you ask your parents right now, and they're in their 60s, 50s or 60s, ask your siblings that are your age if they have 5G on their phone.
Oh, they won't even know.
They don't even know where to look. That's a shame. So you guys got it, but why isn't that information being shared? And why aren't folks understanding that you don't have to pay out your nose to get access? And you don't always have to use this device as an entertainment device. Mm-hmm. It's an informational device that's underutilized. And if we do that, the rest, how much more phenomenal would we be to grab the very creative survivors in the hood, give them the right access, and see what happens? Call it the hood. The hood could be Beverly Hills, or it could be the ghetto or the barrio. Just figuratively check somebody if they want to say, what are you referring to, the hood? Shut up. Be quiet. Everybody lives in the hood. Some of us got cable and some of us don't. How about that? So how would you change it? And I can go on and on about it. But my next mission, when I'm done with the regular public education administrative support setting, we're going there because I feel communities need to be enriched. And the digital divide and giving them the same old story that's not completely true or irrelevant for actually it's 14 years now because they started pre-K 3 to 12. And the same old stories are in the same old books. They get mad at you for not teaching. And those stories don't make it what we call relevant for us today. And I think that needs to change abruptly, like critical race theory. It's just an excuse. It's just an excuse and debate it however you want. Make yourself feel good if you want. But if you give people the information they need, your age group is past it. They're looking at these old people and say, what are y'all talking about? Y'all must think we stupid. And the answer is, yes, we do. Oh, no, stupid may be a bad word. I'm sorry. Stupid is not a good word. Let's go a little more powerful than that.
Okay.
Ignorance and uninformed.
There we go.
Oh, what does ignorance mean? Look it up. Lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. So people depend on that now, and they believe anything you put on social media, and they don't want to go on research and double check or fact check, and you can get it within a few seconds. We're not teaching our children to do that. If we did, math scores wouldn't be in the 30 percentile. Mm-hmm. Passing standards wouldn't be what we call an F. Because they don't have access. So what would we change? What should we change? Nothing. We don't need to change anything. We need to upgrade the system. And the system will change it for you.
I like that. How, okay, but when you, so when you think about something like that, that sounds really, really huge, or like a very big task, or a very large feat, how do you start doing that? Like, what would be the first step?
I'm glad you asked. It's a, our nonprofit's motto is, and hopefully this answers your question, and you can ask for more details. We want to close the digital divide. Mm-hmm. Everybody should focus on this if you're interested, especially if you're an educator of anybody. You have to close the digital divide. One student, because they all go to school, mm-hmm. one school that really needs it, mm-hmm. and one community at a time. If you don't, you can try and do a blanket campaign. Guess what you get parents to do when you start in elementary school? Those parents show up. Mm-hmm. They always show up in elementary school. When they get to middle school, they're like, I ain't dealing with that young, so they should know what to do. Mm. Right. At 12 and 13, they know what to do. In high school, oh, they're so smart in high school. They're still teenagers.
Right.
They need your help. So parents tend to wean themselves off their children thinking they got it at a young age. Well, we're not factory workers anymore. Your age group is not the factory worker that they think you are.
Yeah.
So what happens when you give one person access that they've dreamed about that they've never had? And then you empower the household and all the households around it that feed into that one school. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. Then you have a learning environment that is beyond powerful with no limitations. Then you do it again. Then you get other groups to do it again.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. And that's not the only model. Mm-hmm. But that's the one I know from where I stand, because I'm in school every day. I see it from a different lens. We do that, the rest is history. Because school districts are doing a lot of other things infrastructurally to shore up giving their students access, like buying devices, mm-hmm. building Wi-Fi towers, empowering the buildings with, you know, the connections that they need. But the system in the school itself, the actual infrastructure of the systems in public schools, they're so outdated.
Yes.
I can't even tell you how outdated they are. And they're not very secure. And people just don't want to, you know, tap into all that information. But can you imagine if some fool decided to do that? School districts couldn't protect themselves because the system hasn't been upgraded. They don't spend the money on that. They spend the money on other things, and it's still not enough. But it's supposed to be important to us, right?
Right.
If it's important, then show me. You remember that movie with Cuba Gooding and Tom Cruise, when Tom Cruise was his agent, he ended up
being McGuire.
Oh.
Jerry Maguire. Remember that? What did he say to Jerry Maguire?
What did he say, Sean?
It's a big old thing. Show me the money. All that other stuff y'all talking about, you just talking. We are putting it together. School leaders, teachers, and people in public school are breaking their neck to get it done, and they're not funded like they need to be.
No.
Period. I mean, here, let me give you a perspective. I just experienced pre-K three-year-olds in pre-K, never been out the house to go to any type of structured environment.
Right.
And they got to stay there for 7 hours. Come on now, you crying for mama. Come on, just stop. All y'all think they're going to go to school, it's a great thing. Be quiet. You're in la-la land. Mm-hmm. But those parents have to go to work. Those mm-hmm. parents are saving $1,000 to $1,500 a pop per kid to put them in daycare somewhere.
Yeah.
And if you're getting a discount, it's still $700 to $1,300 or more, right?
Right.
Those funds should be given to those teachers. Because if you don't know how to handle a three-year-old mm-hmm. for 7 hours and you got 15 of them in your class. Ooh. Or 20.
Lord. Yeah.
Come on now. That's on video and that's real talk. I'm going to advocate for those people. If they don't like it, too bad. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Because until you go in there and see it, I am not happy about that, because that's not fair to those babies or that those adults. And if you want them to educate people, hold on. If you want them to educate people the way they need to, if that's what you really want, okay. As I just said, what did Cuba Gooding say?
Show me the money.
Show me the money, man, because it's there. Find it if it ain't there. Yeah. If it's important to us, if that's what we want.
Exactly.
The whole, I'm sorry, that you get me on my soapbox, man. I'm sorry about that.
That makes sense. No, I felt all of that.
And like you're seeing it a lot with companies just overall in different industries. Due to the pandemic, they're losing a lot of workers. So now they're trying to give them benefits and pay that they could have given them a long time ago to try to retain high talent and to attract high talent. Mm-hmm. So that same, absolutely, like you said, applies in the educational space as well, for sure. So
Absolutely. Because think about this. Yeah, think about how many male role models are in the lower levels in public school around the world, around the country. Just take the United States. No, let's just take Texas. Let's stop. Let's just take Texas. Let's not go any further than that, but it's the same everywhere. How many male role models, put it this way, people try and think and hold on to the nuclear family mindset. Mm-hmm. The nuclear family mindset is mom, dad, two kids, and a dog, house. Doesn't say apartment. Doesn't say can't buy groceries. Doesn't say dad and mom are not together and they're sharing custody because there's another family involved and they're all splitting kids. It has nothing to do with all, none of that. Right. So people's perception is you should get home training. You should know how to act when you walk in my door. That's one. Two, it ain't my problem. I'm going to give you all this homework or give you some homework and your parents should be at home to help you. Wow. Mm-hmm. What planet are those people on? Well, they're on an old planet.
Yes.
The new planet is nowhere close to that. And I'm talking 40 years of new planet, 30 years of new planet, minimum. So what happens when you have people stop and say the pay that teachers are getting 10 years ago is almost the same as it is now with a few perks here and a few perks there? Yeah. And is that fair? Not to mention, is that fair even if you didn't give them more money? If you gave them more resources, if they just gave those folks what they needed to get it done, the money wouldn't matter. If you just don't even give them the money, give them better benefits, like healthcare benefits, because that takes about a third of some teacher's salaries if you have a family.
Yeah.
Now imagine that. Pre-K and a third of my salary is going to benefits and I'm dealing with 15 three-year-olds all day long, every single day. Right. Let's just take pre-K. I'm not talking all the way up. It's the same all the way up. It's just a different scenario. It's a different requirement for each level. But my point is, if they get the support they need, mm-hmm, if they get some of those benefits and you get access, those little babies are ready to have access. I got a two-year-old that FaceTime phone called me with her mama's phone, yes, at 6 o'clock one morning. She FaceTime phone called me and she's less than two. Mm-hmm. And she, Uncle Joe. I'm like, where's your mama? She's looking around for her mama. Her mama wasn't there. Her mom was in the other room. Imagine that. They're ready, but yeah, we're not. Yeah.
I agree with that 100%. This new generation is very different and they've grown up very differently. And so we do need to meet them where they are. The same methods that we're used to using just aren't cutting it anymore. So I agree with that.
And we can get better. But I think we're going to get there. And it's just a matter of, you know, folks like myself, and there's a lot of us out there. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of nonprofits that are there and they're starting that here in Texas. It may take us, you know, a little bit longer, but I'm going to do everything I can to partner with my people to be able to do it, because, you know, we're in Houston rolling around and I'm rolling through certain parts of Houston where the university's been there forever. And you got mansions across the street from the university and you got, you know, what we call 50-year-old homes across the street or around the corner from the university. And it's like night and day.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I go deeper than that and say, okay, you can't afford to get that done or something's happening. We're not going to judge you about that. Who cares about that? You got a roof over your head. Good. Do you have access? And if you don't have access to telehealth, what does that look like? And that's just one example.
Right.
Why should you be driving to the doctor? And you know you can't drive your mom because you're 72, your mom's 95. You're trying to take her to the doctor and she can't go. And all you have to do is do this. And it'd be a wrap. And they send a prescription and you walk around the corner or drive just shorter to go get your prescription and take care of mama.
Right.
Versus driving 30 minutes in Houston traffic. And then it's an hour and a half. And then you got to drive back and you got to eat. So all of those things equal lack of efficiency.
Yeah.
This gives us more efficiency. I'm in another city talking to you on a podcast. I didn't have to stay at home and use my computer on my desktop.
Right.
I got 5G. I'm telling you, I'm on my phone.
Yeah.
Everybody should have access, not just those who can afford it.
That's very true. Mm-hmm. And I just have one more question for you before we hop into our segment. I'm not sure if you have any more that you want to get into. But as the school year is starting up, what sort of goals do you have for yourself, but also for the kids that you're over for this school year over the next few months?
I want to keep them calm and keep everybody as stress-free as possible. Mm-hmm. The systems are in place. We'll upgrade the technology and the access as we go, because everybody knows how important it is. But my goal, after what we've gotten through here with, you know, one of who knows how many pandemics the human race has had, because social media can warp the uninformed mind. Yes. And move people in the wrong directions to stop caring for each other. They want to socialize, but they don't want to socialize in the way that takes care of everybody or each other. They want to socialize selfishly. So my goal is to be able to get rid of that thinking as best we can, or reduce it, or not even address it. Go past it and leave it in the slow lane, and be able to take care of people, especially the young folks who have no social skill development. They've had a break, some of them, longer than what they should have. So to focus on their mental health, to focus on my own children's mental health, mm-hmm. my sister, my wife, my cousins, my kinfolk, and all the other babies and young people I know, this is no joke. It is not easy to operate in solitude. It's not fair. So to focus on that is huge for me, because I have my own issues. I mean, I'm probably as ADHD 4 as you can get. So you got to tell me 10 times sometimes if I'm not interested, and that's probably everybody in school. Well, yeah. I also have inner workings that if I didn't have a great support system, I got a great support system. Mm-hmm. I can name you 20 people that got my back.
Yeah.
Everybody doesn't have that. They don't have that. So my goal is to be able to rally the troops. Mm-hmm. Rally the village, whether the village is a campus, or whether the village is a community, whether it's a school district, whether it's, you know, up there in my own personal neighborhood where I live, everybody knows me, and I'm not going to let you off the hook, is to be able to take care of yourself, to look somebody in the eye and literally say with meaning,
yeah,
how are you? And look in their eyes and know that they're not good or good or in the middle somewhere. And then they'll give you a honest answer, because your spirit is genuine.
Yeah.
So I want to focus on that. And that's my goal, is to stay that way and make it contagious. Because without that, there's no relationship. Without that, there's no trust. Without that, there's no progression, only for a select few who know how to fake it. Wow. And I'm not cool with that.
Hey, that's a good goal to have.
Yeah,
and like you said, it's all about being genuine and establishing that rapport and trust. So I feel like the listeners should know that you're genuine based upon our conversation. I feel like you've, even with this one episode, you reach a lot of people that you haven't previously reached, because like you said, your intentions are genuine, and then you've had the gift of gab, like you said, so you're able to articulate what you're trying to say. So definitely
Absolutely.
Appreciate
That's good.
It.
Thank you. Yep,
and we just have a few more questions for you, a few quick hitters. They're going to be fun.
Okay.
A few questions to get to know you a little bit better. And we're just going to ask you a few things, kind of rapid fire. You could just give us the first couple things that come to your brain.
Okay.
So I know you are a huge golf guy. If you could pick three dream courses that you haven't played at, that you want to play at, what would those courses be?
Ooh, the first would be, of course, there's a course called Cypress Point, which is in Northern California. It's a private course, but man, I'd love to play there 2 or 3 days in a row and just progressively get better, because they got some holes on that golf course that are fantastically beautiful, but they are tough golf courses. Some of the pros probably don't even play that course. It's so tough. Pebble Beach, of course. Pebble Beach is probably, I could play there, you know, 2 or 3 days a week, easy, just because of the weather and the view and the quiet. And then, of course, I would love to play, it's one of those courses in Scotland, I can't think of the name of it. It's not the one they just played for the British Open, but any of those golf courses in Scotland, I would love to go there every year and just spend a couple weeks playing a few of those when it's not the, you know, middle of rainy season. It might be some of the rainy season, but it's just a few of the top three that I would love to play. There's some here in Texas that are really nice too, but I played most of those. Probably the one, hopefully Tiger's listening. I'd love to play his blackjack course, which is outside of Houston, which is where I am now. If he called me and say, man, I give you an invite right now, I would tell the job, sorry, guys, I can't come in Monday. I'm going to hang out with Tiger. Or Tiger just gave me an invite. I'm out of here. And I'll be back. But there are lots of those courses. But those three areas, those three courses for sure, I would, in a heartbeat, I'd be gone. And I'd love to play not once, but at least two or three days in a row.
Cool. Okay. Just had a quick follow-up to that. For those that don't know about golf or that think golf is boring, what does it for you? What attracts you to the sport and why do you love it so much?
It can't be conquered. I mean, it's not conquered. You don't win. Really at the game of golf. You might win that day or you might win the tournament with the best score, but it requires consistency and nothing, put it this way, you can't guarantee that your conditions are always going to be the same. There's so much variety. There's so much diversity, which is exciting for most of us, but especially me. Diversity for me in life is golf. Because life is diverse if you're open-minded and you take it all in and you enjoy it all. Golf is like that for me. And most of us golfers, it's a challenge because you're never going to really conquer it. Tiger will probably tell you, and some of the other pros will tell you, they don't always have a great round. They don't always have, that's why they play 4 days of a tournament.
Yeah.
What really gets it for most of us is the diversity, but also the challenge of being able to manage that enduring 3 or 4 hours. Because it's not just 15 minutes and I'm done. It's not a 30-minute workout.
Right.
It's 3 to 4 hours.
I didn't know that.
You have to focus on hitting a little bitty ball into a smaller area with the wind blowing, with the rain blowing, or the mist blowing, or the green is sloped like a spaceship, mm-hmm. and you're trying to stop it from rolling off. Well, all those conditions give us the thrill, most of us, to try and make it happen. Mm-hmm. And to try and get, you know, that good score, which it could be 90, it could be 80 or 70 or 65. But that challenge never stops. And you can't guarantee that every day. And that part keeps us going, keeps me going too.
Very cool. And my golf knowledge ends at Top Golf, but just kind of hearing you talk about it makes me want to play like a real game.
Too. It's really, really, really quiet. Yeah, easy going. Some courses have airplanes flying over them, but for the most part, you have a lot more downtime in golf than you have golf playing time. It only takes you about a minute or so to hit your ball, 45 seconds if you're a fast player, 30 seconds. It only takes you about a minute with a routine to hit a golf ball. Mm-hmm. So that's 18 holes, 4 or 5 shots per hole. So that's 5 to 7, maybe 5 to 10 minutes per hole. You're actually hitting a ball.
Yeah.
So that's 180 minutes. Okay, that's a little more than 2 hours. Okay, they're almost 3 hours, but it doesn't take you that long. You do more talking and thinking on the golf course about something else than you do golf. Some people don't because they're mad and frustrated, but it should be that. It should be that relaxing venue to where you can talk about life, you talk about deals, you talk about nothing. Sometimes I play by myself. I don't want to talk to nobody. And sometimes it'll give you that peace and quiet as well.
I love it. I want to do it now. So a couple more questions for you, Joe. So if you were to have an actor play you in a movie, who would that actor be?
Oh, my. I would say a young Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
No, he could be the current Morgan Freeman because
I've never seen him so young.
Don't say that to him, man. He's giving some grace, man. Respect your elders, buddy. He looks fantastic, man. I would say if I had to pull somebody, I would say one of the guys we just lost, Denzel. I can't think of his name, man. He just passed away. He played in Ma Rainey. He played the sax.
Oh, Chadwick Boseman.
Chadwick Boseman, yeah. So yeah. Boseman, yeah. I would say Chadwick, and then I would also say Denzel, if he could do it, because he and I are around the same age. And then I also thought about way back, if there was someone that I could count on, it would be like a Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, yeah.
Or even, hey, or, you know, Steve Harvey. I would say Steve Harvey, because what you don't know is I crack a lot of jokes and I laugh all the time at people. So it's probably Steve Harvey, because he's really good at saying, you didn't just say that, did you, to me? Yeah. I mean, and then he has a comeback like, oh, who are you talking to?
Steve is ready.
He ready for you, but he's not going to steer you wrong. More often than not, we can't help ourselves. We want to help people. Mm-hmm. Making the money, forget all that. We just that happens when you're serving and taking care of people. Yeah. But if you genuinely do that, I have to think about someone who I know would be able to fill a role in, and you would be like, is it that fun? Absolutely.
Yeah. Those are some great choices.
And then in a world that's forever changing, like we saw with the pandemic and just a lot of loss in 2020, even in 2020, what are you most grateful for right now in your life?
Being here. I mean, I can, that's too general. I'm sorry. But that is one of my answers. I'm really grateful to have people outside of my family that I've known for 20 plus years, some longer than that, some 40 years, like my college teammates at Baylor for 40 years. I am really, really grateful that we have remained close as possible, and really cordially, genuinely kind and empathetic to each other for that long a period of time. I'm really grateful for that, because even the ones that I haven't known that long, most of my friends that I call friends, I always call them brothers. And no matter what happens, argument, fuss, fight, we're still family, we're still brothers. And we mean it. And we're going to look out for each other. And it's not just in words. You know, guys, sometimes we don't talk much, but we just do the action piece. And when you need something, it just happens. And you don't need to know who did it, but you know it's one of your boys that did that. Mm-hmm. And I got a bunch of those folks in my life. There's a few ladies too, but the guys I hang out with, they're stellar guys, and we would do anything for any of each other anytime, any day of the week.
I love that. It's really, really important to have a good network. This is one of the reasons why we even have this podcast.
Right.
So I'm actually going to let Cedric wrap us up and finish us off today. But I really do want to thank you just for your time. The conversation.
Sure, you're right. Welcome.
I learned a whole lot. So yes, then I'm
going to
wrap us up.
Cool. And we just have like one last question for you, essentially. If you had to present a challenge for our listeners, something they want to accomplish or something they should incorporate in their everyday lives, what would it be?
That's a good question, man. Yeah. Because I have several answers for you, but I'll give you one and a half. How about that? And I alluded to that earlier today. What I don't see a lot of is the level of empathy that has almost vanished. So I will ask everyone, I will challenge you to check yourself when you find yourself falling into the mindset as if you're on the airplane, your window shield is down, your earphones are on your head, your hood is over your head, and your mouth is shut, your eyes are almost closed, and you're in your own little zone for 3.5 to 4 to 5 hours flying, and it's like you're the only person on the airplane, but there's about 200 to 350 other people in the plane with you. I will ask everyone to start to think more empathetically about your fellow man that's right next to you, or right in front of you, or around the corner from you, or when they start hollering at you and you cut them off, stop for a minute and understand there may be something going on with that person as to why they're so doggone, so damn mad.
Yeah.
Because I told them and blew my horn and said, don't hit me. I'm not going to get mad at you. I just didn't want you to hit me. So we have to stop on the freeway and we have to, you know, go exchange all this stuff. I just blew my horn to get your attention. So you wouldn't do that. So you can keep going. Mm-hmm. Well, that person doesn't know that was my intention. And I'm not going to, I can't get mad at them for sticking their hand out the finger and giving me the one finger, sticking their hand out the window and boning me off with their little, you know, middle finger. Well, empathy gives you a chance to get past that and let it go and breathe. So I'm going to ask everyone to exhibit more and more of that every single day to everyone you meet.
Love that answer. I was actually asked that question myself. I did one of my friends' podcasts, Dead by Tomorrow. Shout out to those guys. So I had to steal that question because it was such a good one. Mm-hmm. And I love the way you answered it. And I think that would go a long way for everyone. Just having empathy, putting yourself in someone else's shoes. And that, like you said, will resolve a lot of conflict between people, a lot of preconceived notions. So
absolutely.
Shout out to the listeners. I hope you're more empathetic moving forward. And we really want you to incorporate that into your daily lives. But Joe, appreciate you. Appreciate you for taking your time out to talk to us. It's been a great conversation. I'm sure our listeners will definitely benefit from it. And we appreciate you for having you on. So guys, that's another episode of the Invited Podcast in the books. Appreciate your time.